next case this morning is in the interest of Leighton C. and Manhattan C. Before we get started, another regarding the item here today, how is regarding the law are we going to start there?
Judge, we made a decision that the state is going to present argument this morning, and I will be listening.
Okay.
Thank you.
If we have a question for you, I would actually like to hear from you.
Okay.
So can there be some division of time so we can please ask you a few questions?
Seven minutes to three.
Thank you. Is the panel ready?
Yes, sir.
You may proceed.
My name is Melanie Cook, and I represent the appellant Madison C. In the case before the court today regarding the termination of my client's parental rights to her two sons, Leighton and Landon. I would like to ask the court to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please.
That's so noted.
Today I'd like to explain to the court why it should reverse the decision of the juvenile court in Lancaster County. The court found that sufficient grounds existed to terminate Madison's parental rights and that termination was in the best interest of the boys. It is our position that the court erred in making those findings. I don't believe that the court, that there was clear convincing evidence presented that supported that Madison hadn't addressed the conditions that brought her before the court.
What were those conditions that brought her before the court.
At the time that the original case was brought, it was regarding her being unable to provide care for her children. She had left the oldest child with her parents without any kind of a guardianship or parental delegation of parental powers. And then there was a voluntary case, and then shortly after that voluntary case came about, a formal case was brought after Madison had tested positive for methamphetamines. So those were the two main issues that were brought before the court. As the case went along, it was a longer case. There was a period of time in which Madison, at the beginning of the case, was making very little progress. Eventually, she did get into treatment, made enough progress that from the end of August in 2017 to December of 2017, she made enough progress that there was a motion to return the children to her care, and the children were returned to her care in January of 2018. The children were with her until July of 2018, at which time they were removed after she tested positive again for methamphetamines. The courts had made arrangements, the department had made arrangements for her to go to another evaluation. Madison asked for inpatient care. She felt that would be best for her. When she got there, she realized that there was somebody there who had been present when she was being abused by her ex, realized it was not a situation she could be successful in. She left with some medical advice at St. Monica's and went back to Sarah Worley, who had made the recommendation and asked if she could do IOP instead, which Sarah Worley agreed she could do. She did successfully complete IOP and step down to OP and then into individual therapy by the time, shortly after the termination trial had begun. She was drug tested throughout that time. There are several mistakes in the court's order, I believe, that misstate the facts that were in evidence, including one of the significant things is that the court states that Madison failed to test at all until September of 2017. The court also noted that while there was testimony regarding the horrific domestic violence that Madison had been a victim to, the court claimed that it was not brought to the attention of department personnel during the years of 2015 to 2017. And yet the state's witness, Emily Goodman, who did the first evaluation, stated that the first time that she met Ms. Madison, that it was one of the most severe post-traumatic stress disorder cases that she had seen, and that Madison had shared with her the extreme physical ramifications that she was seeing, nightmares and flashbacks.
And she first started seeing Goodman in March of 17?
Yes.
And what's the court's error?
The court claimed that the domestic violence was not brought to the attention of department personnel during the years of 2015 to 2017. It was early in 2017 at the very latest that the court should have been made aware as Madison admitted that to the counselor that was doing her evaluation. And in fact, that counselor determined that the focus should be on the trauma and post-traumatic stress disorder rather than the drug use, which we believe was secondary to the abuse that she had suffered. There was a testimony regarding how those two issues often go hand in hand. The drug use can be introduced to somebody who is a victim of domestic violence and then used to control that individual. And then when that individual finally breaks free, they don't have any coping skills. It's not a quick process to recover from something as horrific as this. And the overwhelming evidence from visitation notes from people who observed the children with Madison was that she was a good mom, that she loved her kids. During the period of time that she relapsed, she did make efforts to make sure that the children were safe. She says that she didn't use any kind of language. She was very cautious to ask for somebody to be there, but she wasn't ready to admit that she'd made a mistake. She was afraid that her children would be taken away and she would never see them again. So there was a period of time when she was relying on the foster parents. She had an amazing relationship with these foster parents who currently held the children, and they reached out to her and asked, can the boys come over? She would reach out to them and say, yes, can I have the boys stay with you this weekend?
And the court viewed that as negative, correct?
Yes. And I don't think that it should be viewed as a negative. I think that those informal supports should be viewed as a protective capacity. In fact, both of the therapists testified that that was a form of protective capacity, that making sure that the children were someplace safe was a form of protective capacity. Considering what Madison had been through, her hesitancy to trust makes sense and was explained thoroughly by the domestic violence expert. Another mistake that the court made in its final order was finding that Madison hadn't completed the recommendations that the court had. By the time we got to termination, she had completed the recommended level of care, which was intensive outpatient, had stepped down to IOP. She was regularly testing. She was having good visits with her children. She was going to every single visit, which she had done since August after she left St. Monica's.
She does have some positive tests.
She does. There were two tests that were, there was a test as soon as she entered IOP, which would be expected because she admitted to usage. There was a time when she tested positive for, I believe, clonazepam, and there was a time when there was a positive for morphine in December. But the problem with that is those results were never introduced during this trial. It was testified to, but the drug and alcohol test counselor testified that the amounts in the RAD test that she was sent comported with Madison's testimony that she had a poppy seed bagel. And
that's a credibility issue though, right?
The drug and alcohol therapist who said that those levels comported with that report. But that report was never entered into evidence at this time. And I will also say that the drug and alcohol counselor testified that there are lapses and there are relapses. And what Madison had, if what she was doing was using, and it wasn't sort of obviously bagel that she said that it was, then it was still just a lapse. It was a one-time use, 2 months apart, and it wasn't a time when she had her children. And the reality is the court does not expect perfection of parents. And certainly shouldn't expect perfection of parents at a time when something as major as termination of parental rights is at stake.
But the case had been going on since July of 2016.
It had.
And there's how long have the kids wait? I think that's always the balancing
point. Well, I absolutely agree. I think that there was significant progress regarding Madison's trauma at first. And I'll tell you, children were originally returned to her. She became overwhelmed when the two children were back with her, trying to balance everything, and then the flashbacks started again. She didn't know how to cope with it. She was afraid to ask for help, and she didn't. And that was a mistake that she admitted freely. The children were removed in July, but by September, she was engaged in intensive outpatient. She successfully completed that. She successfully completed the OP before the end of this trial. All the things which might be positive. One of the other things that I want to bring up very briefly, because I find it very concerning, is that the court refers to Ms. Drew McMillan's as being engaged by the department to speak with Layton to help him after he was removed. She was not engaged at the time in July when he was removed. She was engaged in the end of November after the termination had been filed. And she never reviewed the visitation notes before she opined that the best thing for the children, or at least for Layton, would be permanency with the foster parent. She only ever did an attachment assessment with the foster mother. All of her information came from the caseworker and the foster mother. She refused to return calls in this park, and she didn't review positive visitation notes. The only opinion she could possibly have given, because she didn't have any positive information, which was available to look at Madison. She, even though she admitted that children can be attached to more than one individual. And I believe that that is a serious misjustice for children, because every single person who testified about the bond, that there was a positive bond between Madison and her sons.
Let me address this to you, and these are difficult cases. We had an appearance trial over about 8 days, and over a long period of time. We have an experienced juvenile court judge in Lincoln. We also had an experienced guardian ad litem in this case. And the guardian ad litem has come down strongly in favor of affirming the court's decision. And it always bothers me when the guardian ad litem does that, because it's usually rare when that happens. So how do you respond to the guardian ad litem's position in this case?
I believe that her position is that Madison, it took too long for her to adjust these things. And I think that it is expecting an awful lot for somebody to overcome what Madison overcame. And it was admitted on testimony by DHHS that they believe that Madison did suffer the abuse that she testified to. I think that part of the problem is that these are very many children who spend a lot of their time in foster care, and it was unfortunate. But we were very, very lucky in this case that the therapist testified that the bond between the trauma was minimalized by the good relationship that the biological mother had with the foster parent and their willingness to continue communications. And I think that shouldn't be disregarded. I also don't think it should be disregarded that Madison made significant progress once she found a way to admit that it happened to her and admit that she made the wrong choices in finding ways to cope with that. And I think that putting a timeline on that is harsh, and I understand the reasoning for it, because we don't want children to live in foster care. But I believe in this case, we didn't wait for the last resort. I think that Madison is making progress, that she was doing every single thing that she was supposed to be doing, and the department, once she left St. Monica's, had determined that she should not have her children back, and I think that's reflected in the record.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. How far would you take her over?
2 minutes.
Okay, please add that to the athlete's time. Good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, judges. My name is Maureen Lansky, and I'm representing the state in this matter. It wasn't so much that that the mother was unable to parent, it was that she was unwilling. It took months, actually a year, before she actually started cooperating in this case.
Yeah, but let's talk about the reason why.
Well, she did cooperate eventually because of the domestic violence, and I think it is a credibility issue as to what the extent of the domestic violence was.
No one disagreed that she
Nobody is that. But her claim that she could not do anything else, she went to Colorado with Mr. Ryman, her mother, and her child. She spent time with Mr. Ryman and her oldest child with her parents. Obviously, that's the reason why he was removed, because he was still with her. She claimed she couldn't get away with him, but she obviously got away with him because he wasn't the father of Landon. She spent time again with her with the child's father. The history of this case is that Ms. Clark has gone out and had a relationship with Mr. Eastman, who was a drug abuser. Then she had a relationship with Mr. Eastman, who was also a drug abuser. And then she had a relationship with Mr. Riley Scott, who's also a drug abuser.
And did that all transpire before or after she had substance abuse treatment?
Well, Riley Scott happened after she had treatment.
Treatment for which? Because my understanding is she initially was seen, and the therapist decided that she should be treated for mental health issues, domestic violence issues,
well,
substance abuse.
That wasn't initially, back when the case started, she was supposed to do substance abuse.
But the therapist decided she didn't need substance abuse. What she needed was mental health.
That was 7 months later, after she refused to, actually more than 7 months, refused to cooperate with drug treatment, saying she didn't need it and refused. You can't really say that a parent who's refused what's been recommended, a court order, for several months, and then after the children get removed a second time, say that her refusal to cooperate with that court ordered treatment plan, it is a reason that she should get extended time. She cooperated with Ms. Emily Goodman's treatment, and it clearly provided some level of success. Yes, and then at trial she's saying she didn't learn anything from Ms. Goodman, but she did. It's her choice then to quit going to see Ms. Goodman and being overwhelmed because of parenting. All she was asked to do at that point was parent her children and try and get a job. This is something all parents are doing, but that overwhelmed her. She was unable to get the children to do EDM appointments, unable to get them to dental appointments. She wasn't using the former foster parents so she could go out and look for a job or have me time. She was doing that to spend more time with Mr. Riley. Riley Scott, when you look at those videos, she was ready to leave the state with him, spend time with him. She was madly in love with him. And that's more than 2 months after these children have been removed from her a second time. She's going to those visits. She knows how hard it is on those children to have her leave after those visits. But what does she do? She spends her time visiting Mr. Riley Scott in jail, telling him how much she loves him. She talks to him on the phone. She's giddy with excitement.
And this is the time when she's relapsed, correct?
This is when she's relapsed again, and she's allegedly involved in treatment again in September. She again doesn't admit that she's that he's a problem until after she's been caught on a jail phone call. Then it's, oh yeah, I told him that he's not good for me. She will only admit the truth after she's been caught lying. You can't judge whether or not she's ever going to be a sitting parent because her history for 4 years has only told the truth and made self-serving statements after she's gotten caught. She refused for months to admit that that was Riley Scott in her apartment. And so after she came to the conclusion that, yeah, there's no way around it, everybody knew she was lying. She has a personality disorder, too, and that came out in the testimony. So how are we going to fix that? How long do these children have to wait for a parent who's not overwhelmed but just taking care of them and getting a job, something that's just minimally adequate? The state wasn't looking for anything but no meth use. If this gets reversed, that's basically saying that the policy behind 15 out of 22, the whole long line of case law saying that children shouldn't have to wait for uncertainty of parental maturity, all that's going to be thrown out the window. Because these boys have been waiting for so long for her to be a mature parent, and she hasn't been able to do that. The termination was filed after it came out that she's yet again in another relationship. I mean, we would have to then wait months to see whether or not, when the next time is she's going to lie about a relationship with the next guy. The case law is that you look at their past history to see what the future is going to hold. What her past history is, a refusal to cooperate until the last minute. I mean, she spent the majority of this case not cooperating with recommended services. She cooperated for about 6 months after, a couple of months after Mr. Lyman was put in jail. And then after she got her children back, she soon quit cooperating, and then didn't cooperate again until shortly before the TPR was filed. But even so, that was still not complete cooperation until after the TPR was filed.
Where have you come in on one of the appellant's witnesses was Susan, is it Murkowski? Am I pronouncing that right? The PTSD?
Yes.
And the quote really didn't comment on whatever evidence that she provided. Do you know why that would be?
I don't know that that was all that relevant. There's no case law or reason that says PTSD or victims of domestic violence get more than the 15 out of 22, that they are entitled to extra time. She is not the victim in a juvenile court case. The children are the victims, and they've been victimized by her failure to continue with treatment with Ms. Goodwin or ask for additional help at that time.
But do you think the purpose of the rehabilitation plan to rehabilitate the parent?
Yeah,
in this case, Madison had two issues. She had a domestic violence issue, and she received therapy and treatment for that. Would you agree with that?
Yes, Ms. Goodwin did address that, yes.
Okay. So then after that time period, she regains custody of her children for a short period of time.
Yes.
Correct. But she relapses, correct?
Yes.
And then she gets substance abuse treatment, correct?
Yes.
And how many months after that substance, well, she completes the IOP, correct? And she completes the steps.
And that was after the TPR was filed.
Well, the TPR was filed in October.
Yes.
Of 2018.
And she didn't finish the IOP until after that was filed.
Well, the trial was held in December, correct?
Yes, the trial, I'm talking about when it was filed.
As of that time, she had completed IOP.
Yes.
She was still engaged in the OP.
Yes.
Correct? I think it was Worley who testified she had made excellent progress, correct?
Yes.
Okay. She had completed an updated evaluation that was ordered. She was participating in individual counseling. She submitted to all drug tests. She had completed her psychiatric eval. She was attending visitation. We don't expect perfection from these parents. So what more does this woman need to do?
Well, she's done all that before and then went back. But she was asked to do that treatment, that drug abuse treatment, clear back in 2016.
Which she was incapable of doing because of the domestic violence, according to her.
That's according to what, yes.
Correct.
But her expert had also, I think, testified that, I guess I'm not going to be able to remember that exactly. But yes, she basically fought doing the drug and alcohol treatment throughout the case. A lot of that happened well before some of the domestic violence. In fact, the more severe domestic violence that she testified to, she still didn't want to do it back then. But, I mean, the substance abuse, I believe, is still somewhat addressed by Ms. Goodman, and that was the recommended level of treatment that Ms. Worley herself had recommended, because I believe she was the person who did the evaluation and made that recommendation. So now she's apparently, months later, she changed that recommendation, but she was the evaluator who made the recommendation that that the mental health piece be set first. I believe that was...
I think that was Goodman, wasn't it?
Well, no, Ms. Worley then did an evaluation too, because Ms. Worley worked in Parallels back in 2017. There were co-workers, and then Ms. Worley went to a different practice. But I would again ask that these children not be allowed to wait for permanency any longer than they've already waited for their parents to show that.
Thank you. Okay, so how much time does the guardian ad litem have now?
1:46.
Okay.
Thank you. This is court and counsel. I'm Joy Schiff from the Lord and the guardian ad litem for these children. With regard to this case, I think it's important to remember that it was even longer than the court pended in this case. It was almost a year before. I mean, it was like from November of 2015 to June of 2016, she was operating under a voluntary plan on this case. And then in June of 2016, her mother called in to the authorities because she was trying to take the children from her home, and she believed that she was under the influence of methamphetamine. Layton was born later, and he tested positive at the time of his birth for methamphetamine. With regard to this domestic violence issue, because it is an important issue, in the beginning of this case, in June of 2016 and onward, until
the summer, the following summer of 2017, Ms. Clark persisted in denying that they were in a relationship, denying that it was an abusive relationship, and all of those things. And I do agree that we had testimony saying, well, it's not that unusual to deny those things. But the fact of the matter is, apparently, Ms. C's reasoning for not doing the drug treatment that was recommended or the mental health that was recommended was because she was so scarred because of the domestic violence, which she was still participating in at the time. And after Mr. R got incarcerated in this case, she still ended up talking to him on the phone. She was involved in other relationships at the time. And the actual mental health professionals said that she needed mental health therapy in order to put her in a position to cooperate with drug treatment. I think it's also important that you look at the fact that Ms. Worley testified in this case that she recommended IOP treatment, but that Ms. Goodman said that she shouldn't have IOP treatment and she should have individual therapy first. And she said she compromised her professional's opinion and went along with what she was told to do by Parallels in this case.
Well, can we fault that?
Can we fault Ms. C for that? Yes, I think we can.
When Goodman is saying it's okay to go this route.
Well, you have to also remember that Ms. Worley also testified that the only reason she recommended that she do IOP treatment was because Madison said she wouldn't do the residential treatment. So when she said, I won't do residential treatment, she met her where she was and said, well, then do IOP treatment. But even during the time of IOP treatment, she tested positive for methamphetamine. And with respect to the poppy seed incident, Madison testified at trial, no, that was a lie, that she actually had ingested methamphetamine.
Did she do
that
for that one?
For that?
No,
I think that's in my brain, but to be honest with you, I had anticipated not arguing this morning, so I apologize for that.
But we do ultimately have Worley's testimony at trial saying over the last 3 months she's made excellent progress.
We do have that. But I think there's a credibility issue when you have Ms. Worley earlier saying that she's modifying her professional
behavior.
I'm going to submit there is. I mean, when she says, I'm going to meet her where she's at, is, you know, she can go to IOP treatment, even though she's testing positive during IOP treatment, which would indicate she needs a higher level of care, I think that to say that she's doing brilliantly, you know, well, is kind of, there's a credibility issue there.
So at the time of trial, what has Madison not done? At the time of trial, as far as everything that's been recommended, what's left to be done for her?
Well, she never did IOP treatment. But I mean, she never
did IOP.
She did IOP treatment. She never did the residential treatment. She had not engaged in the individual therapy.
No, residential.
They actually were recommending residential until,
right. So the IOP, the department was okay with the IOP. They weren't still recommending it.
No, the department had a long ways to try to keep these children in Madison's home from January all the way to July, and what some might say too far, to keep the children in Madison's home from January to July of 2018, when the children were being exposed and tested positive for methamphetamine and marijuana in their hair. So yes, I think the department reached out and did a lot in this case because Madison was saying, I can't stand the pressure, and so she wasn't going to her individual therapy with Ms. Goodman that she should have been going to. She never even engaged in domestic violence programming that was recommended until about December when we were in the process in the hearings for
terminating her parental rights is when she first did domestic violence programming. From the beginning of the case, she was denying she was involved in a domestic violence relationship, and she was saying that she really didn't need treatment for a year in this case. And to go back and say at the 11th hour she can correct the conditions and that we shouldn't terminate her parental rights when these children have languished in foster care all this time, I think would be against the weight of the law in the legislature in this case. I also disagree that the court viewed it as negative that she relied on the foster parents. The court did not review that as a negative. The court reviewed it as a negative that she dropped her children off at the foster parents and said she'd be back to pick them up, and then kept saying she was at Walmart getting a loaf of bread for hours, and the foster parents ended up keeping the children overnight. That's what the court found a problem with. It wasn't that she relied on the foster parents. I do believe that there's sufficient evidence to terminate the parental rights in this case. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Did the appellant have any rebuttal time left?
No.
So you took over. Would you like 2 minutes of rebuttal?
Yeah, please. Thank you, others. I would like to address, I don't believe that Bennett Madison ever testified that she had that the poppy seed incident was methamphetamine. Poppy seed doesn't test positive for methamphetamine, it's morphine, and that's what happened in December. And I don't believe that there's any citation where she's admitted that, because I don't think it happened. I will say that it is the case where I came in right before the termination trial. So I was not here for the entirety of the case, so I was getting caught up. And so I don't know the dynamics before then. I will say that I do think there were some problems with dynamics with trust for Ms. Worley's testimony, and I picked up on that. But I will tell you that Ms. Worley was the therapist that was recommended by the department. And I don't think it's fair, with such high stakes, to hold Madison accountable for the fact that they don't agree with the therapist that they recommended. And in addition to that, when the department requested and the court ordered an additional evaluation, which happened after she had already begun, almost was finished with IOP, with a different provider, that provider also recommended, so that she's in the therapy that she needs to be doing, and she's doing what she's supposed to be. And I think that that is very important. And I also don't think that it's fair to say that Madison was free to go and was able to go to Colorado. It is not that simple. Just because somebody is able to leave doesn't mean that that person who abused them is not still in control of them. This is a person who had threatened to have her children hurt. This is a person who had threatened to have continued to hurt Madison. And he had shown that he was capable of doing it. Madison finally got away because he went to jail for the awful things that he had done to Madison. And she got a protection order. She requested that it be reinstated, but because he's in jail, they said that there's not a risk.
Was she calling him?
During my time in the case, no. I believe that there were a couple calls after the first time, after he was arrested. But she testified against him. I guess I don't know that for certain. She got a protection order. She went to jail for what he did to her and then had no further contact with him. Although there was testimony that her mother received a letter from him. And in that, he admits to manslaughter in there. And she was scared. And that was received over the objection of the county attorney and the guardian ad litem because they didn't think that it was relevant. And that hold on her, I think, is relevant. He can still scare her from behind bars. That was a realistic fear. These kids deserve to have their family. They deserve to be back with their mother. She's fought incredibly hard, done what she needs to do. And case law says we have to consider everything all the way through. And this is not a last-minute effort. This started more than a month of the children being removed. She started IOP and was successful with it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for being here. We have just a minute. We'll take a moment. Thank you very much.
Thank you.